So this set of slokas of the Bhagavatam here in this story, it's just another story of the Bhagavatam, wonderful story, in which this genealogy of kings and important personalities in these different dynasties have been described. That's meaningful in a way, because many people, as you may know nowadays, they are interested in their own genealogy, isn't it? In fact, I did not know, but the way this country sets up these social security numbers is in such a way that you can trace your genealogy. The first three digits of your social security number denotes, you know, where your ancestor came from, which city, which state, blah blah blah. So it's kind of interesting, and I just found out a couple of days ago about that. So it's kind of interesting that here the Bhagavatam, even though written so long ago, spoken so long ago, sometimes it may seem to us kind of, you know, what is the use of listing all these kings? This king's names that we can hardly pronounce, hardly can read. You know, strange names, strange times, strange circumstances, as we will see the story of King Surabhi Muni. You will see as we keep reading, you know, something strange happened to him. Just like something strange happened to the other story we were reading at the beginning of the ninth canto, King Sudyumna. So, some might say, well, you know, what has all got to do with me today? Somebody might say that. But the important thing here is that the Bhagavatam itself is stressing the point of understanding the purpose of life. And that purpose is, in this set of slokas, talking about Vanaprastha. Now, Vanaprastha, as we know, been described all along the Bhagavatam, and again, probably here in the last verse that we read, he's reiterating the Vanaprastha life, what it means. It means retirement. And even though in this case of this king, Yuvanashva, he had 100 wives. Just imagine that. So, this is in this Vedic culture, actually. Vedic culture is a culture in which having sons, begetting sons, is a big deal. It's if you get married and you don't have a son, you're in big trouble somehow. That's the cultural understanding. Not so much so today, nowadays, in this Malecha culture that we live in, you know, it's like people get married, and have, if they have sons, that's fine. If they don't have sons, well, that's also fine. Or if they have no kids at all, that's also fine. But as we see in this portrait of the stories of these kings, in this genealogical description, it says for a grihastha, it is very important to have children. Not only economically important, but or socially important, but also politically. Like in this case, in these kings, in those days, if a king had no son, he wouldn't have opportunity to pass on the kingdom to them, to their sons. But also, in the Vedic system, in the spiritual sense, it is very important to have sons, because sons usually perform the ceremonies of death. When the father passes away, the son takes care of the ceremonies of, you know, funeral ceremonies. So it was very important. Not only that, but also the Vedic understanding is that when someone dies, when a father dies, that person goes to a certain region and is depending upon the sacrificial offerings of his surviving sons. So in this culture, it's very important to have sons. So we see here that in the case of this other king here, it says it, Yuvanaksha had no sons, and thus he retired from family life and went to the forest. The Bhagavatam doesn't say Yuvanaksha didn't have daughters, and thus he retired from family. He says sons. The Bhagavatam said sons somehow. So you can see the stress being placed on this idea of having sons. Now then, because of that, again, King Surabhi Muni is going to be born out of this whole situation. The situation is being set, the stage is being set for Surabhi Muni to be born. But in any case, I was meditating upon this slokas, that, you know, how important it is to have progeny for grihasthas. Because not only grihasthas populate the earth, but also the quality of the progeny is very important. That's very important. That's also stressed in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. When Arjun was about to start the war, the Kurukshetra war, one of his main concerns was the depletion of males in the kingdom. Because Arjun, he was not an irresponsible military man. Military general, he had to think about the consequences of his actions as a king, as a kshatriya, and he was, you know, meditating on the thing. He was saying, well, here I am, you know, about to start a battle, a war in which millions of men are going to die. What's going to happen to their wives? What's going to happen to their mothers? What's going to happen to the aging parents? These are very strong, valid arguments. And he put that argument towards Krishna, saying, Krishna, how can I engage in this ghastly warfare? It's not just about killing my cousins here, but, you know, killing all these men, and the kingdom is going to be depleted of sons, going to be depleted of fathers. So very important thing, having so it's not only important in that sense, but also having progeny is important in the spiritual sense. Because having children and not engaging them in Krishna consciousness just kind of defeats the purpose. In fact, in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, we know the story of King Vrishadev, who is an incarnation of Krishna, incarnation of Vishnu. He instructs his sons, and he said one of the teachings is that, you know, what is the use of having kids if they are not engaged in self-realization? So somebody might think in our culture that, you know, you have kids and then, you know, you raise them nicely, properly, they are, you know, well-fed, well-educated, well-established, they eventually get nicely married, blah, blah, blah. But if they are not engaged in self-realization, that's also a failure. So having kids having a progeny in this case is a very important issue. It's not just about, you know, the biological urge to mate or the political urge to have somebody who's going to take over the kingdom, or the urge to have somebody who's going to take over your business, you know, when you're dead and gone. Like a lot of rich people, they, you know, they're concerned. They have amassed this indescribable wealth, and they say, when I die, where's it going to go? I got to have kids so that I can pass it on. You know that in this country, when you die with a lot of money, if you don't have an heir, a person who's going to take over, the state takes over. The state takes all your money. So for those of you who are wealthy out there, better think of ISKCON here. So anyway, people are concerned. These are valid concerns. People want to know what's going to happen. You know, But in the Vedic civilization, not only that is important, but also it is also important for what purpose you have brought progeny into the world. And so we can see, I mean, even this sense of, you know, who am I gonna give it this legacy to, was even displayed by Srila Prabhupada, actually. If you read the biographies, the different biographies written by so many devotees of Srila Prabhupada was also concerned. He used to say, you know, I got to pass on this business to somebody. I'm getting too old. You know, I don't have many days to live. Or Prabhupada used to say, I just want to sit down and write and comment on the scriptures. Somebody else has to do this, managing of this company. So Prabhupada was concerned also about leaving this to someone else. And just like these kings in this story of the Bhagavatam, they had so much concern to have sons so they can give the kingdom. So Srila Prabhupada similarly was very concerned to have able disciples, qualified disciples, to take over his mission. The same idea. Exactly the same idea. And so we should understand that the important roles that we have acquired just by being a grihasthas in this Krishna conscious movement, the very important roles, is not to be taken lightly. A lot of the times we think that sannyas, the sannyas order of life, or the brahmacharya order of life, is, you know, the paramount. That's the top that you can get. But actually, if you think about it seriously, grihastha ashram is equally important. It's equally important. Because without grihasthas, there is no... You can't have the resources, you can't have the people, you cannot have the different things that you require to keep on the mission of Srila Prabhupada. So everyone is needed, everyone, all the different ashrams. The Varnashram system is set up in such a way that they are all equally important. It is not that the sannyasis are the most important, the only important. They are probably the most important, but that's not the only important aspect of Varnashram or the brahmacharis in it. But the grihasthas and even the vanaprasthas, Prabhupada is saying here, the purport is referring about vanaprastha life. He briefly described what it is. It means there is no more, you don't rent a house anymore. You know, and this is becoming very relevant because many devotees are reaching an age in which, you know, the kids are grown, married, gone. So what is left to do? You know, you can only keep doing the same things you've been doing for so long, because you had a reason to do that, because you had kids to raise. But after a while, what is there to do? Once the kids are grown, the only option we have for the members of the Krishna conscious movement is really to keep going preaching, to keep this preaching alive. There's nothing else to do. If we can't engage ourselves directly in preaching Krishna consciousness, then we help others who are directly engaged in preaching Krishna consciousness. We become their support. And that support means a lot to those devotees, to the preachers of Krishna consciousness. We may not ourselves feel that we are capable of becoming great preachers, but simply by contributing to the mission of Srila Prabhupada, of keeping alive the flame of Krishna consciousness in this world. Just by doing that, just that act alone puts us in an equal footing with everybody else who is engaged in preaching. There's nothing else to do, like I said. I mean, if you think about it, a life without preaching is like a life without enjoying life. What is there to do? I was wondering the other day. You know, at work, sometimes people get together and talk things, and, you know, they watch sports. They're old, they can't play themselves, so they they just enjoy seeing someone else having fun, or, you know, or there is beer, you know, they drink beer, they get intoxicated. What life is that? And they can get a lot of money, but they can only enjoy so much. They can't enjoy all the money. Or, you know, they may have everything, but there's no satisfaction. Because the soul, the jiva, is actually seeking satisfaction in an eternal atmosphere. Srila Prabhupada explained this in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada explains that the suitable student of the Bhagavad Gita is that person who understands that for some reason he's suffering. No matter what, there is some kind of botheration about an existential botheration. Why am I suffering? Why am I here? Why am I not satisfied? So, in the Varnashram civilization, or the Vedic civilization, when somebody awakened to this kind of inquiries, the Varnashram had a solution, or had an option, which in this case is, we're talking about Vanaprastha. In the case of the king Jivanashva, who had no sons, and therefore he thought no reason to keep going on a household life, so he just said, okay, let me hit the forest now. What is the use of having a household or a kingdom if I can't have a son? So, the Vanaprastha order of life in this case, Prabhupada always recommended to his disciples and his followers that not to abandon the preaching mission. You know, retirement. Retirement for a devotee is, devotees should retire only when they cannot really move the body. Then you can stay at home. But if you have the energy, if we have the impetus, if we have this understanding, then we should get back into the preaching mission of Prabhupada. There's nothing else to do. Really, if you think about it, I mean, everything else is... Look at the entertainment industry in this country. It's the same thing. They, year after year, year after year, year after year, the same comedies, year after year, the same movies, year after year, just different names, different... It's the same thing. Chewing the chewed. Whatever they chewed a year ago, they're chewing again the next year. Just in a different, a different package. They keep eating the same thing, the same nasty things. They go to jobs that they hate. They go into the commute that they hate. So, there's nothing really appealing in life except the life in self-realization. And that's the mood of the Bhagavatam here. Even though we may think that these stories, these genealogical descriptions, you know, what it's used to me. What has this got to do with my life right now? The idea is that we have to think in terms that we have a legacy. We have something wonderful in our hands, which is Krishna consciousness, which was given to us. And Prabhupada had trusted us that one day we will do what he was doing, contributing to the mission of Krishna consciousness. And that's what really life is all about. There's absolutely nothing else to do. And kids, the same thing with the children. If the children don't get this opportunity to be engaged in Krishna consciousness, then it's a failure, actually. It's hard, but I mean, so many of us, we go through that stuff. We raise kids and one day they don't want to be involved, and they just take off and disappear. And then we are left scratching our heads. Or, you know, we invest a lot of energy in making devotees, and someone else comes and takes them. You know, it's like same deal here. It's the same concern. You know, thousands of years ago, it's the same idea. What is the use? So we should appreciate what we have and take it ourselves, give it to our descendants, to our kids, to our children, and, you know, do the best we can and just live happily. we shouldn't be so frustrated that, you know, we're going to hit the road to a forest because we don't have kids, or we cannot imitate what these great souls were doing in the stories of the Bhagavatam. But we can get the spirits, we can get the meaning of their lives, and then act accordingly and apply it to our own case. And then that's the only way we're going to be happy, engaged. We're going to be happily engaged in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Any comments, questions? Yes, Prabhu? Ramiya?
So I'm trying to understand, are you offering different choices there for someone who is moving out of that grihastha stage as to what they could or should be doing?
Well, Prabhupada, I mean, some devotees, the retirement, you know, the retirement ages, we have to deal with weaknesses of the bodies, you know, diseases come, and so many other limitations come, but what will keep us alive, what will keep us enthused, energetic, is the fact that we, you know, we can contribute to the mission of Prabhupada. I mean, what else is enlivening in this life? You tell us, I mean.
Well, it seems they could also be traveling to holy places, you know, working.
Yeah, that is a fact. And, you know, we all do at different stages of our life. We do to holy, I mean, the Bhagavatam also in the first canto, we find stories of devotees going to the holy places. But at the same time, we're not going to be going to the holy places, you know, year after year after year after year after year. Because Krishna consciousness is not just about us. Krishna consciousness is not about me, how can I be saved? If one really understands the spirit of Srila Prabhupada's endeavor, the spirit under which Prabhupada actually started this Krishna consciousness movement, you will realize that Krishna consciousness is not about me. Krishna consciousness is about how we can get others engaged in Krishna consciousness. And yeah, I mean, we can go to holy places to get purified, you know, and... But even after that, I mean, what are we going to do after that? Even Lord Balaram, prior to the battle of Kurukshetra war, he went to tour in the holy places. But what did he do after that? He came back. He came back into the, you know, fire of the Leelas. So what are we can go to holy places, yes, that's a fact. Devotees do that. But if we are really imbued with the spirits of Srila Prabhupada, we're going to realize that, okay, whatever we gain, we've got to give it back. And we only can do that by being engaged in the mission of Prabhupada. Yes, Prabhu?
So, just a small comment. There's a very good lecture in Banaprasa is the one who lives in the forest. I mean, we already live in Alachua forest. Well, the preaching mission of Srila Prabhupada is there always. We just have to take part.
Yeah.
It's like it's Harinams, it's, here in this community, 6-7 Ratha Yatras a year. So
absolutely.
We just have to take part or support those who are distributing books. But that's the way Srila Prabhupada teaches. And ultimately, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, he said, we are not this, we are not that, we are not Varanaprastras, Sannyasis, Brahmacharis, you know, big Sannyasis or Varanaprastras. We are not these bodies, we are, what we are? Eternal servants of Krishna.
Right.
Gopi Bharata Pada Kamalayo.
Shall we come forward?
Can you explain a little more? You said something about making devotees and then somebody taking them away. What do you mean by that? Can you
Prabhupada had a concern, same thing. Prabhupada used to say that for every devotee I make, I had to shed 2 gallons of blood. Prabhupada appreciated his disciples very much. Even though Prabhupada sometimes was heavy in chastising, but Prabhupada loved his disciples, and he used to say that. He said, Prabhupada used to be very concerned when somebody leaves Krishna consciousness. Somebody leaves, he was very much affected by that. And that's when Prabhupada gave that analogy. For every devotee I make, I had to shed 2 gallons of blood. That was an analogy he was giving just to tell us how crucial was to, how difficult it's actually to get somebody out of the material energy and engage into the transcendental energy. It is hard. It was hard. It is hard for a pure devotee, let alone for us. So if we, again, if we get the spirit of Prabhupada, the understanding of Srila Prabhupada, the purpose of Srila Prabhupada, the mission of Srila Prabhupada, we should go the same lines. We should go along the same lines. Because Prabhupada was concerned about who's going to take over, who's going to carry on this mission. Just like these kings, I mean, these kings are in the same exact same situation. They were concerned that they didn't have sons. Who's going to take over this kingdom? Because granted, you're born in a family of these kings as a male, you get all the chances to be well-educated, well-prepared, well-groomed, to be a decent prince and then a decent king. So similarly, devotees who are born in a family, kids who are born in a family of devotees, the great advantage is that, you know, they have the father who's a devotee, a mother who's a devotee, you know, the opportunity to be hearing about Krishna, the opportunity to be growing in Krishna consciousness, the opportunity to engage in Krishna conscious activities from very early age. So, and then suddenly, I mean, imagine if you do all that, if your son or daughter gets all he or she needs in Krishna consciousness, and at the very end says, well, I don't want it, just walk away. I mean, that's not fun. So similarly, when we lose a member of the Krishna conscious movement, we should feel the loss and regret, like Srila Prabhupada regretted. And we should do everything possible to stop it, because we have a job to do. The only people who can really go on with Krishna consciousness are the devotees. There is no Superman that's going to come and save you. Really. It's not... See, Krishna consciousness, even though we have the three pillars of Krishna consciousness, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, but really the fourth pillar is yourself. Because you can have a great guru, you can have access to the scriptures, and you can have the association of great saintly people. But if you don't want it, it's not going to happen. So really, the fourth pillar of Krishna consciousness is oneself. And we should be conscious of that. And the only people we have in life is the devotees. And so if we want to preserve the mission of Srila Prabhupada, all we got to do is take care of ourselves. Take care of each other. And go on. And then all these kids that are sitting here, all these young kids, young children, they are the ones that once we are dead and gone, they are the ones who are going to keep going this alive. They're going to keep this flame alive. Any comments more? Last one here.
Yeah, I know you were mentioning why in Bhagavatam there's so many mentioning of kings and a lot of personalities we don't know, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. But normally every Purana is done in 10 categories, beginning with the creation, and one specific part is called Manavatar Ishanukatar. So what happened during each Manavatar and the kings who ruled in that Manavatar, that's how they get the breakdown of what leelas were performed when, because Srimad Bhagavatam is not really chronological.
Yeah.
So they break it down by, in this Manavatar, these kings rule, and then they get to a specific king, and by the way, during this time, Bhagavan did this thing, or this devotee did that thing, and this is the system for reciting any Purana. So Srila Vyasadeva used that to narrate Srimad Bhagavatam. He's starting at one point, and he's trying to get to a certain objective, but he used that same system.
Yeah. Thank you. Mataji, any comments? Thank you very much. Our voice is Srila Prabhupada.